on Talk Station.
You get a daily dose of news trends.
Crisis averted in aviation sector after aggrieved unions suspend strike.
Intense conversation.
The ICPC board members.
Oh, she has mercy, like in human.
She is happy because she has level.
Sports and news to keep you updated all day and every day.
Join the conversation on your number one talk station.
95.1 Nigeria Info.
Nigeria Info.
Let's talk.
This is Hard Facts.
Hard Facts.
Hard Facts.
On 95.1 Nigeria Info.
Thank you so much for staying with 95.1 Nigeria Info. Welcome to your passionate, trustworthy conversational radio on air, off air, online and on the street. We are number one, and you make us rock by always being with us, listening, tuning in, contributing. We say a very big thank you for that, and welcome you officially to Hard Facts, the Wednesday edition of the show. My name is Kimberly, Kimberly Wachuku, that is. You can call me Kim, the Oracle, Digital Oracle, OTF, Madam Speaker, Fellow, all of them join. And we are not going to forget Ochanyanwa of Nigeria Info. Baba Chelsea, I hope you've heard it consistently for 3 days. The name has been attached. And yes, for those asking, we have Dr. Majid Dahiru in the studio, comfortably seated. He's always here on time, I promise you. The day he doesn't show up. But when he shows up big. Dr. Majid, you're welcome. Delighted to have you join us as
Thank
usual. I know you had a bit of a car problem, like you mentioned, but you still made it here.
Somehow.
Sorry about that.
No problem at all. Thank you. Good afternoon to our listeners too.
Good afternoon. Tokwe, good to know you've tuned in and ready to go already. I says, yes, he's around, Dr. Majid. Yes, he is. Welcome, Ochanyanwa, says Charles. Thank you very, very much. And yes, I've been told we'll be live on Facebook and YouTube, so you can go check it out at Nigeria Info ABJ on YouTube and at Nigeria Info ABJ on Facebook as we stream live the conversation we're having in the studio today. Dr. Majid, I'm sure we had this conversation about streaming live or not the proceeding of the tribunal.
Yes.
It feels like the ruling party, the president-elect and his deputies, seem not to be too comfortable with the idea of a live broadcast of the election petition proceeding. It's something that the presidential candidate of the People's Democratic Party called for, and it feels like Labour Party is favourably disposed to that. Also, we've had some senior lawyers say it wouldn't be a bad idea, and even taking our minds back to a legislation that was pushed at one point by a House of Rep member, I recall, who was trying to call for this. But Tinubu Shettima, they're completely opposed to the idea. And you need all parties involved to give this one a shot, yeah?
Sometimes you begin to wonder how politicians and political parties respond to issues that would otherwise would have enhanced their public perception ratings positively. How do I mean? In as much as a case is in court, in a properly constituted court, such as the case before the Presidential Election Petition Tribunal, don't also forget that this same case is also in the court of public opinion. People are having conversations around the issues emanating from the court.
Mm.
And whether you like it or not, justice must not just be done, must be seen to have been done by all parties. Now, when a party in a matter before a court is now opposing the transparent proceedings in court for the viewing public, you begin to question, is there anything they have that they are hiding? So, I don't know, sometimes people themselves bring certain things that constitute PR disaster upon themselves. What is the big deal in transmitting or broadcasting live what was happening in court? Now, since you are opposing this, you are now giving lie to the speculation out there that probably you may have done certain things during the election to get you victory. I mean, sometimes you begin to wonder why we do certain things that, by the end of the day, brings more perception baggages to us. There's no big deal in broadcasting it live. Absolutely not.
I mean, what's there to lose, you?
There is nothing. So, but then you are opposing this. You are giving the impression out to millions of Nigerians that indeed you are against a transparent court proceeding that would have enlightened Nigerians about how the court actually reached its own conclusion and ruling. Because now that you have opposed this, you have left room for speculations, all manner of speculations that will continue to delegitimize your otherwise legitimate mandate. I am one of those who believe that the elections conducted, not without flaws anyway, but was a reflection of, you know, some certain realities, and that Bola Tinubu Ahmed is the apparent elect. But when you begin to put up such objections to, you know, simple issues as, let us beam this thing live so that people can learn what has happened, people can know what was done during the trial that resulted into, you know, whatever judgment the court is going to actually make on this matter. Why are you opposing it? Why are you the one opposing it? So it's very suspicious. And they're not doing themselves any good by opposing this simple procedure. It's very simple. If there's one case that needs to beam live to all Nigerians to see, it is this case, especially this particular case. Some people will see and make, you know, their own judgment themselves to say, look, well,
and given the fact that a lot of people are saying we're waiting for the judiciary to do the right thing, you would want the process to be as glaring.
There's nothing to hide. There's, look, there is no secret about a petition, election petition matters. There's nothing to it. So I'm a bit surprised that the strategist for the president-elect and his party do not seem to understand that what they've just done is to give, you know, some credence to certain impressions out there that they have been beneficiaries of a flawed process. And so they are relying on the judiciary to rubber stamp that flawed process with judicial authority. Otherwise, why would you oppose people viewing, seeing live what's happening in court? What is the... You can actually say they should do a secret trial then and shut everybody out who is not a party to the case.
Because briefs are going to come in definitely, minute by minute, for the journalists who are there.
So what is the difference? So this, for me, this is like an own goal by the APC and the president-elect. It's an own goal. This is an unnecessary objection. Very unnecessary. And somehow I had silently prayed that this does not also come up, so I would not have this kind of conversation we're having today. I'm one of those who believe that we should be setting an agenda for the incoming administration. But this that they have done today is such that they are giving people the impression that they have something to hide. And for me, what do you really have to hide? It's going to be an open trial in any case. Like you rightly pointed out, journalists should be there, correspondents should be there to report by the minute what's happening in court. But when you beam it live, people sit down in the comfort of their homes, they listen to all presentations before the justices of the appeal court and the Supreme Court, and they make their own conclusions. And everybody would have seen the reason and the basis upon which certain judgments were made. You know, it lays to rest certain, you know, misconceptions out there, because this election was tightly contested. I don't really blame people who think or who dispute the outcome. It was tightly contested. So everybody thought, well, I should have won. Certain things have been done well and all of that. So with this now, it compounds the issue. So for people like us, who didn't go the path of completely condemning the election, this puts us in a very difficult situation. Because why are you opposing?
Why are you opposing?
What is there to oppose? What is really there to oppose? What is the,
well,
what is the
deal? According to report, the president-elect Bola Ahmed Tinubu and the vice president-elect Kashim Shettima urged the Presidential Election Petition Court to dismiss the application by Tiku Abubakar and the PDP for a live broadcast of proceeding. They argued that the relief sought by the applicant are not such that a court should grant. With much respect to the petitioners, the motion is an abuse of the proceeding of the Honorable Court, it states. Besides describing the application as frivolous, they say the court is not a soapbox, a stadium, or a theater where the public should be entertained. And through their team of lawyers, led by Chivoli Olanipekun, they wondered why a petitioner would file an application to distract the court and waste its precious time. They stated in the counter-affidavit that the application relates to policy formulation of the court, which is outside of the PEPC's jurisdiction as constituted. And the application also touches on the powers and jurisdiction invested in the president of the Court of Appeal by the Constitution, over which this honorable court, as presently constituted, cannot entertain. And they say it also touches on administrative function, which are exclusively reserved for the president of the Court of Appeal, that the application is aimed at dissipating the precious judicial time of the Honorable Court and does not have any bearing on the petition filed by the petitioner to the Honorable Court. So they're saying disregard it.
Honestly.
But then if you read the room,
yes,
the call is we want to see a live procedure of what is going on.
Look, like I said, this is an own goal on the part of the APC and the parent elects. Legal team.
Hmm.
A very disastrous on goal. What is there to oppose? First and foremost, every of the proceedings have been reported by journalists in real time. Especially now that you have online media all over the places. I mean, people will be reporting as the judge is making pronouncement, as the lawyers are making the argument, it will be reported almost in real time. So what is not the difference between having a camera to just be middle class? People will watch and see and probably learn why those with the thought won the election they need to win. And why those at INEC, for example, have a farm to have won the election? Won the election, which is in this case in the interest of the winners, the APC, and the candidate of the APC, the parent elect.
Mm.
So it is in their interest, more than any other person's interest, for these proceedings to be beamed left to the Nigerian people. I have thought that they would have been the least of all the parties to have rejected this, if they are confident of their victory. The court cannot be a soapbox or cannot be a place for theatrics. No, it's a place for a serious business.
Yeah.
It is that serious way that Nigeria wants to see the seriousness of the business. And it would have been very, very okay for all of us. We don't have any speculations about what happened, what didn't happen in the court, which might now be used to continuously create crises and controversies after even the elections have been won and lost. So I don't know why they are doing this, but in any case, as long as they will not stop the press from covering the proceedings, well, Nigeria can always make do with that. But again, coming out to say you don't want live coverage speaks to certain issues. It means you have something to hide, which ordinarily you shouldn't have anything to hide. This is a public interest matter. An election petition case is a national matter.
Maybe it just sounds off because it's a different request. We've not had this sort of demand and perhaps maybe the pressure you will put, trying to understand from their perspective why it shouldn't even count.
This election is one of Nigeria's most consequential. It's an election like no other before it. So having it beamed live to me would have laid to rest all of the speculation. You know, sometimes you see a lot of conspiracy theories about this election. You start wondering, are you still living in this same Nigeria where these things were said to have happened? The live proceedings would have put all of that to rest. So that if at the end of the day, for example, the judiciary upholds the conduct of INEC and upholds the winners as declared by INEC, in this case the parent elect, people would have seen clearly that the arguments that were tendered, that were made on behalf of each of the parties, you have an understanding of why the justices arrived at this case. And it will help deepen our electoral jurisprudence, and it will also help Nigerians generally to understand how the current Electoral Act, the legal framework governing our electoral process now, actually works and the extent to which it can work. These are the issues. Now, you leave no speculation, you leave no room for speculation. Look, I don't want the kind of crisis we are facing today after the election to be faced after even the justice of the Supreme Court have pronounced their ruling. It's something that is going to weigh us out, really. So allow people to see for themselves what has happened in the court. There is no harm in it, there is nothing wrong with it.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. But just before we move to the next story, is it something that the court can decide on its own, or you need all parties in agreement for this to happen, or the court can decide, maybe just for that sake, and also because there's also that perception about the judiciary, the part of a lot of Nigerians, to say we want people to follow the procedure from a particular period of it.
Well, I don't know how it works, really, particularly as pertains issues like that, really part of the court, issue before the court.
Mm-hmm.
But you raise an important point your follow-up question now. That is, the judiciary having the need themselves to come clean for the Nigerian people because of the negative perception that the judiciary has gotten for itself recently with some very controversial judgments. I think it's also in the interest of the judiciary to be seen doing justice. And so, if I were the justices of the appeal court, I will rule in favor of a live proceeding so that nobody comes to where and say, look, this judgment that the appeal court or the Supreme Court gave was because somebody came in and whispered to the justices and did something and somebody looked at them. A lot of issues. So look at it, saves them a lot of image problems going forward. So for me, what we need most now in the judicial education before our Lord Justices is utmost transparency, openness, so that justice, at the end of the day, will not just be done, but to be seen by all to have been done. It's a simple process. It's a simple principle in law. Mm. That is justice being seen to have been done. And the best way for us to see it is when we sit down in our living rooms and watch the proceedings live and see arguments being made, being canvassed. Because there are lots of misinterpretations and misrepresentations about some sections of the law that all parties are laying claim to now.
Yeah.
So we need to see these things argued out, so that you can understand the logic, the common sense behind some of the decisions that were taken there, so that we will now use that to prepare for the next round of election without living under the impression that what is wrong is right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is permissible, what is not permissible under the law is permissible under the law. We need to know the extent of the Electoral Act, to know, you know, the bounds and all of that, so that people can make informed decisions for themselves. And the best way to do this is to be transparent as possible. And I see no harm in it. It is in interest of everybody, particularly the winners. So that when they are declared in the event that
the judiciary affirms their
victory, people would have seen the processes leading up to that affirmation. Mm. They too can have their arrest.
Everybody can rest.
But now, since they shouldn't be, like, we have opened another Pandora's box. People now start insinuating, why are you hiding from the cameras?
Mm. All right, we'll go on a very quick commercial break, and we'll be back some more. Don't forget, check us out on YouTube and Facebook at Nigeria Info ABJ.
There's a place where you can get it all trending.
People are dropping on their vehicle and running, leaving their vehicle.
A place where you can air your views.
I want to report your discrimination.
Only on your number one station for talk.
This is not the way. We cannot continue like this.
95.1 Nigeria Info. Abuja. Let's talk.
Must not play politics with security.
Let's talk about the biggest conversations.
Made of trustworthy ideas.
Passionately connected
to everyone.
Let's talk.
Let's talk on the Nigeria Info 95.1 Abuja.
Nigeria Info.
All right, thank you very much, Ibrahim Ajara, as usual. First to leave a comment on our YouTube page, Och Noel says he's there also. Peter Emmanuel, we see you. Henry Opanachi says I inspire him. Hopes to meet you one day also. I hope so too. And Mahmoud Mohammed, Kim, good afternoon. It seemed like, okay, we're not at that story yet. So this is you jumping ahead of yourself. Dr. Majid, you make my day every Wednesday. Thank you, says Obi Nduka. Sam 007. Oga Majid, I hello. See this fine African man. Okay. Godwin, lawyers go into courtrooms with their cell phones. They video almost everything that is happening. So Shetima and Mr. Tinubu should know that the proceeding is close to a live coverage. And Oludade Abiodun says, good afternoon, Kim and our guest. Live telecast or not, Tinubu actually won. I just want to advise people not to heat up the polity. Ayewo says, no need of a live coverage. If it goes live, more tension will rise again. Look at what Labour Party versus Labour Party were doing in court today. Henry Ajerebe says, objecting to live broadcast of the presidential election by the APC and its presidential and vice presidential election is like saying no to transparency. And Badmo Sumbo says, it's only doctor's analysis in Nigeria Info. The only doctor analyst in Nigeria Info. Greetings, says Badmo. Aliu Garikida, good afternoon, Dr. Majid. Well done, sir. Winner Ethelbert says, was Ekweremadu's case not transmitted live? Was that a theatrical show or joke to people? God help us in the hands of these politicians who we call leaders. And Sahid Gidado is watching us live from Finland. Thank you so much for always joining our program from the diaspora, Sahid. I'll get to your comments in a bit. But let's quickly touch on what some of the issues and development around the petition tribunal today. Like a comment on YouTube talked about the Labour Party saga. Lami Diapapa, factional leader of the Labour Party, was taken into protective custody today after he was mobbed by party supporters in court. Upon his arrival, the presidential petition, election petition court, Apapa confronted Akin Oshuntokun, the Director General of Peter Obi's Presidential Campaign Council, over the sitting arrangement. The situation was brought under control after the intervention of Josephine Ekperobe, Secretary of the Presidential Election Petition Court. However, Things became heated again after the court adjourned the proceeding to a later date. The factional leader had moved to address journalists when he was attacked. A chant of Ole, which translates to thief in Yoruba, rent the air as Apapa was dragged and pushed out of court. At some point, someone in the crowd removed his cap and fled. Shielded by police officers, Apapa struggled to get to his car, but the crowd kept trailing him, and police officers within the premises eventually had to take him away for his safety. I mean, there's just a lot of picture to show how he was rough handled by party supporters in court. And Apapa has been one person who's been consistently in our faces and in the news. It shows, you know, the factional element of the PDP and of the Labour Party, I beg your pardon. And there are people who, some people, strong critics believe that perhaps he's a mole. There's always that narrative of there's a mole. We heard it with PDP and Shettima. You always hear that there's a mole somewhere, even though it's the party disintegrating due to poor, perhaps, organizational management or difference of interest or alignment with other parties at the end of the day. But it shows that this is serious. And I know we've talked about this before, Dr. Majid, but, you know, seeing how it is building and seeing the fact that we still have two groups parading themselves in terms of leadership, how is it that this has not been resolved just yet? I know it's still in court, but one would hope that, you know, they get closure to this so that the party can be a bit more focused.
I think your last line speaks to the issue at stake. It's about destruction for the Labour Party, really.
Mm.
Lamine Diop and his group are laying claim to the leadership of the party, while Abure is also standing his ground
and
remains the valid chairman of the party. Both of them have judgments from different courts to support their own position. So, ordinarily, it is until the Supreme Court rules on this matter that we will now know who really is the chairman between Lamine Diop-Papa and Julius Abure. But one thing is sure, Julius Abure has been the chairman who presided over the elections for the Labour Party. Abure was party to those who filed cases in court on behalf of the Labour Party as the chairman alongside the candidate.
Yeah.
And so Abure has, you know, part of the presidential bid of Mr. Peter Obi, who is the candidate of the party.
Mm.
And so they started these court cases together.
Yeah.
Now, if for any reason Lamine Diop somehow stumbled on a judgment that now made him the chairman, while the other man is still insisting he remains the chairman, some of the apparating judgment from FCT and from Benin, and, you know, it's been back and forth. Although that's one of the issues the judiciary too needs to dig into. But well, it is what it is. They all have one court judgment or the other, backing their own leadership of the party. One would have expected that Lamine Diop should have avoided the premises of the presidential election petition tribunal, because it is still Julius Abure's forte for now. Especially when there are insinuations that Lamine Diop's faction intends in the shortest possible time to withdraw from that case on behalf of the Labour Party and probably declare support for the parent elect. There are insinuations like this. And when you listen to somebody like the former spokesperson of the Abure led NWC, what's his name again? Arabambi.
Okay.
And a veteran politician and a veteran Labour figure too, who was quite, you know, very active in the beginning of this whole Obi for president
movement. Yeah.
I don't know what happened. He has pitched his tent now with the Lamine Diop faction, and he seems to be, you know, the most vocal from that part of the side of the divide. You know, he speaks to ethnic tension in the party along Yoruba and Igbo axis. And you know, we said this the right time too, that the war of words between, you know, elements from this ethnic groups appear to also be having impact on inside the Labour Party itself. And you see a situation where the parent elect is from the southwest. He shares the ethnicity with the factional leader or the factional chairman of Labour Party. And Abba Mbi, one of his interviews, said Labour Party is not APGA. He accused both Peter Obi and, you know, of ethnic domination of the party. He made a lot of, you know, whatever.
Arabambi.
Okay. Arabambi or the Papa faction. So what that tells you is, somehow, I think these ones are beginning to say that, look, our own has one president.
Might as well.
So what we are trying to do this to make sure that this does not rubbish. This is the thing of ethnicity and tribalism in Nigerian politics that I've always talked about. It is part of the issue rearing its ugly head. And so the people from this other side think that they are even being sponsored actively from this other side to cause all of these distractions. But again, Lamine Epa shouldn't have gone to the court premises because he knows that those that are in court are people who
want... Perhaps try to grant an interview.
In fact, going there was, to me, even though we condemn, again, let us put it on record, all forms of unruly behavior must be condemned. Harassment of people, mm-hmm. I mean, removing of his cap, shoving him, is condemnable and does not speak to the civilization, the civility in us as human beings. It's condemnable. But I'm just saying, look, he shouldn't have gone there. Because I know that from the utterances, they seem to have some level of sympathy for the president-elect. And they have a right to that. I mean, they can say, we think he won. To them, they actually think that he won. And that there's no need for all of this. They've made such, you know, insinuations. And there are grapevine informations that, look, there is a possibility that once they become the full, unchallenged leaders of the Labour Party, they might do what they can do to actually sabotage the ongoing court cases. Mm-hmm. This is something that a lot of speculations out there are rife about. So, for me, going to a court premises where you know that the people that are here are those who are very serious, who don't believe that Obi won the election, and they're in court to retrieve what they describe as their stolen mandate, it could be provocative. But again, no matter how provoked you are, you're supposed to respond in a civil manner.
Mm.
You're not supposed to respond
with that level of aggression and assault. Yeah.
No. That is not justifiable. But again, I hope this is not a deliberate ploy to provoke this kind of reaction. So that they have a basis now to make a pronouncement that the Labour Party is withdrawing from the presidential.
That can happen.
Yes, it can. But then it doesn't derail the case. Because a candidate has a right to actually seek redress in court, even if the party is not interested. It happened in 2007 when President Muhammadu Buhari, then General Muhammadu Buhari, ran on the platform of the ANPP. And when he lost, he decided to go to court. The ANPP as a party then refused to go to court because they were interested in government of national unity. So Buhari went to court as an individual.
Okay.
Yes, so it can happen. It doesn't derail, it doesn't take from anything. But the only thing is, it simply denies you some level of institutional support. Mm. Yeah, but otherwise, it does not really affect anything if you have your evidence intact. The only thing is, the witnesses you would have drawn from the party maybe may not necessarily turn up. But even in this case, I think that Peter Obi himself is like the movement that the Labour Party is riding on. So whatever structures or individuals have by way of support.
But beyond the movement, you would expect that the political party would have a solid base that it works with.
Yes,
seeing that you have to operate from that.
For the purpose of the presidential election, the obedient people, those who supported Obi as an individual, kind of took over the structures. They became party agents across board.
But are they party members? You don't have to be a member.
You're just a witness. If you're an agent and your name was submitted as an agent, for example, you have to come and stand as a witness. You've got to say, in my polling unit, for example, what was declared at the polling unit does not tally with what was declared at the collection center.
Okay.
And this is my evidence. So that's not a problem. So even if they declare that they are withdrawing from the petition, it won't really affect the case in court. But the only thing is, it continues to provide that basis for distraction. It's like trying to just rubbish what these other people are doing in court. It has its own political impact, not necessarily legal impact. But all the same, I would have expected that all of these problems would have been nipped in the bud, really. I also observed that the Labour Party, after the election, should have expected this to happen. Because for the kind of showing they put up, the kind of strength they displayed, I mean, for a party that was almost irrelevant in our political exercise, so come into an election and take 12 states, including the FCT and Lagos. And don't forget that the Labour Party won in Lagos State, the home state of the president-elect.
Yeah.
So it was such a massive outing. And you should have expected that the establishment would not sit idly by and allow them to just have...
Just coast, yeah.
Yeah, so they should have prepared and made sure that there are safeguards against some of these issues. But that may not have been the case, but it's okay. What is left now is for them to manage the situation, make sure they have their acts intact. Maybe, for me, they should rally around the Abure people. That's for those who are really of the obedient movement within the party. Rally around the Abure as much as you can, as they are doing anyway, and see that they have enough evidence in court to affirm their leadership going forward. And also want the judiciary to be fair in matters like this, so that it doesn't look like they are doing the bidding of any of the factions,
yeah,
or those that are perpetrating them from behind. So this is real establishment politics at its worst happening in Nigeria, mm-hmm, and happening with the Labour Party. But again, we watch as things unfold and we continue, mm-hmm, to actually comment on the developing stories.
All right, and talking about things unfolding, just before we move to the next story, Tinubu Kwankwaso meet in Paris, and Kwankwaso's party, NNPP, is not one of those very prominent parties in court at the moment in terms of the
presidential election
petition, exactly, at all. And the governorship level, yes, we know what's going on, because they just have a hold of one state that they're really much interested in. But it'd also be interesting to see if some sort of alignment or realignment can happen between the leader of the party, Kwankwaso himself. President-elect Bola Tinubu met with the presidential candidate of the New Nigerian People's Party, Senator Rabiu Kwankwaso, for talks, and was gathered at Atiku and Kwankwaso met in Paris, the capital of France, on Monday. At least we know where he is in Europe.
Courtesy of this story.
It is in France. And recall that at the presidential election, Kwankwaso, the NNPP presidential candidate, won only in Kano, and the president-elect and his guest were reported to have resolved to hold subsequent meetings as they could not conclude on the day that they met. And it's interesting to know what it will be. Jibril was the one who brokered the Tinubu Kwankwaso meeting in France, and that's Abdul Mumin Jibril, was said to be at the center of it all. He's from Kano State.
He's from Kano.
He's a member of the NNPP.
Yes. And he was a member of the APC.
He was, then he moved to the NNPP.
PDP. He was on the Kwankwaso faction, and even the PDP, they moved together to APC. But when Kwankwaso and Ganduje fell out, he remained Ganduje. Somehow he also fell out with Ganduje later, and now joined Kwankwaso in NNPP. And today he's now trying to reconnect
Kwankwaso. With his root.
Yes, with his root. With the president-elect and the candidate of the APC in the last presidential election. Well, it's not a surprising thing. First and foremost, it is always very good for president-elects to reach out to their opponents and rivals.
Mm.
And I've written for that severally. That he should reach out
some
to
some government of national unity kind of arrangement.
It's imperative at this time, really. It is. I know how you see the issues in the National Assembly. There's a lot of care to make sure that there's balancing, particularly religious balancing, in the leadership of the National Assembly, so as not to create further impressions of exclusion or feelings of marginalization. So it's a good thing that he's meeting with Kwankwaso. I also wanted him to meet, even much earlier than now, with Peter Obi, with Atiku, with everybody you need to meet.
Hmm.
And these meetings are not prejudicial to what the case is in court, no. It's to have a common ground for governance, a common ground for the Nigeria First agenda.
Yeah.
Simple. Certain issues will be resolved. For example, I had thought that since he has emerged as president, he will look into some of the policy plans of some of his opponents and say, look, I think I can borrow this from you. I think I can borrow this idea. You know, just try and come with an agenda that seems to satisfy all sides, particularly since they are also all working towards a better Nigeria. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And it also helped our tension. Very much. It will help douse tension.
Okay.
By the time the followers see their leaders dining and whining, it douses tension. For the purpose of good governance, anyway. Not for the purpose of sharing national cake. We must always put that caveat. Now, but as far as this case is concerned, this meeting with Kwankwaso in France is hardly a surprise. I'll tell you this today. Kwankwaso's presence in the presidential race was to the ultimate benefit of Ahmed Bola Tinubu of the APC. In fact, it was even deliberately so.
Really?
Yes. The governor of Rivers State, who was determined by all means possible to make sure that Atiku does not win this election, in whatever way you want to look at it, for reasons that are both personal and collective. Personally, he says that since he has become enemies with Atiku, he has exchanged a lot of words with the party chairman then, the party chairman of PDP, Senator Yocha Ayu.
Yeah.
So normally we know that Nigeria's politics is a zero-sum game where the winners take all. And in fact, the losers stand to be punished severely too. So it was like, for my own survival, Atiku must not win. Atiku's victory was like a nightmare to Kwankwaso.
People like Wike.
It was like a nightmare. It was like he was sleeping and seeing the possibility, and he worked extra hard. So all the things he did was to prevail Nkwakwaso to remain in the race by all means possible.
We know that how. Was there any point where they had the meeting? Or perhaps the politicians will not come out in broad daylight and make you understand.
So as I'm talking about it now, anybody who has a contrary opinion can come out and debunk it.
Okay.
No, he prevailed on him, the discourse, and said, look, it is in the interest of all of us. Because apparently, Nkwakwaso also didn't want to see an Atiku presidency. Because there was a time that there was pressure on Nkwakwaso to step down for Atiku. A lot of northern leaders went to Nkwakwaso to say, step down for him. And so, to cancel that move, he was encouraged with a lot of logistical support to remain in the race. Because if Atiku, if had prevailed upon Nkwakwaso to step down from the race, within that announcing who is stepping down for, Kano would have gone the way of Atiku. Most likely, if you know how Kano people vote, it should have gone the way of Atiku. But the only alternative to Atiku would have been the same Nkwakwaso, who is like a political demigod in Kano, somebody who is highly adored and preferred. You saw the results of these elections. So for that to be the case, for him to remain in the race and deny Atiku that critical vote in Kano, a lot of support, logistical support, was given to him by Wike. And so he remained in the race. And he played in favor of Asiwaju, because if Kano had gone the way of Atiku, it would have been Atiku's votes. Because, of course, Asiwaju didn't win Kano. He only managed to get some good votes with the efforts of Ganduje and his political family. So, in essence, he played a very critical role to the emergence of Atof. To the Bantinibu is aware of all of these arrangements. So what you see them doing in France and the follow-up meeting that will likely happen is to now sit down and share the spoils of war, as is the case with the establishment politics in Nigeria, positions and other things. Now, the problem for Asiwaju will now be, yes, in as much as his presence in the race denied Atiku, your close rival in the north, of this chunk of votes, Ganduje himself was pivotal to your election at the primaries level, and the vote you got in Kano, both place to second place, was also very, very critical. Because without the vote from Kano and some other northwestern states, I doubt if Asiwaju would have presented like today. So how do you manage two enemies that work for you directly and indirectly? That's the challenge before them. And that's why I also heard that he's trying to reconcile both parties. But knowing the history of Kano, it has become clear that the trio of Nkwakwaso, Ganduje, and Ibrahim Shekarau, from all former governors of Kano, they do not seem to be able to sit in the same room for a very long time without walking out of the door, through the window, or through the kitchen. So it's difficult to see how you can bring two enemies, mortal enemies, and bring them in as allies under you. So that will take a lot of...
Mortal enemies, politically. Because these people still hobnob and whine together.
No, we are speaking in terms of the politics of Kano, really. I mean, their enmity runs deep, at least as of today. So I don't know how he's going to manage. It will take a lot of political ingenuity, like a magic wand, to make that possible. Because the moment he has met with Nkwakwaso, be rest assured that somebody's jittering on the other side, saying, wait a minute, what's happening? So it's a tricky situation for him, so he doesn't lose one in search of another ally in Kano. So, well, it's part of the game. There's something surprising about it. And the only thing we'll just caution the establishment is, let all of these meetings be in the interest of good governance, in their own interest, because Nigeria cannot endure another 4 years of low cost. No, it's not possible. They won't. Nigerians cannot take it anymore. We can't. We don't have the capacity anymore to take it.
But you think things are just going to magically change on their own?
There should be a deliberate move on the part of the establishment.
Okay.
To make that change possible now. The last election was between the establishment and the anti-establishment. And for the first time in the history of Nigeria, the anti-establishment came close to winning. They came close to winning. It has happened before. Even in 2015, it was a faction of the establishment fighting another faction of the establishment. That is the case between President Muhammadu Buhari and Goodluck Jonathan. The establishment broke into two and lined up behind these two people. And then it wasn't really about the people per se, but people chose between the two and said, okay, we prefer this other one. While some people also chose the other. So it was a contest within the establishment. But this 2023 election was a contest between the establishment and the anti-establishment. Because 24 years after transition from military to civil rule in Nigeria, our democracy may still be failing, may still not be fully developed but it is a grown young adult, 24 years old adult. So it is mature, yet still developing, maybe has not really reached its full potentials, but it is 24 years old. So people that are born in 1999 are 24 this year. They are young men and women. They want something different. They are no longer part of this old order. They didn't benefit from it. The national cake are so thinned out that it's not even getting to them anymore. My generation was lucky. We participated in the establishment sharing of national cake. Well, we are facing the consequences now. But for these ones, they didn't participate. They were not part of it. So they don't understand it when you say somebody is sharing money to win elections. And they are growing in number. We are 200 million people today. And this will form the bulk of that population.
Yeah.
So any further...
The dynamics of things have changed significantly.
So that we don't have a situation where our democracy will fail prematurely in between election cycles. The establishment, the president-elect as the main man today is an established politician. I know him to be a man of deep mind, fertile mind, if you like. Yes, age may have become a little bit of an issue, but you can't take away the fact that one, he was a Democrat. He was a brilliant man, even as governor, we saw it. I believe he has what it takes, in spite of some of the defects or shortcomings we might observe about him. I believe that Asiwaju has what it takes. If he takes that decision to commit class suicide in order to self-preserve his own class,
based on his antecedents,
he can do it. But has he taken that decision? Is it what he wants to do? And I'm saying it has to be what he wants to do. He's a brilliant person. Give it to him. He can do it if he decides.
But isn't the national level a different playing ground altogether compared to how you can manage things in Lagos?
He has to take a decision to do the right thing now. Because what this he did in Lagos, he could have done it better. But it wasn't done better. But we know he has the capacity of doing it far better than it is in Lagos. Because he has the fertility of mind. Sometimes when he communicates in a way that people don't seem to understand what he's saying, for those of us who know him before, I can easily tell what he was trying to say that probably he didn't say well. And it comes from a very deep and fertile mind. So what it is he's trying to say, I know this. So I'm saying all he needs to do then is to take that decision. It's like, I want to fix Nigeria. I don't want to make money. I don't want to make friends. I don't want to make billionaires out of cronies.
What other money does he want to make? He's an extremely wealthy man, well established.
So I expect you to take that decision. To say, look, this country has been kind to me. At my age, I've been elected president. So I want to take a decision to prove those who voted against me wrong by doing the right thing from the first day in office. So I hope that in addition to this need to, reward, support, it should be within the confines and framework of good governance so that Nigeria does not fall off the edge. Look, the situation is red, as we speak, it's red. Yes, I'm sure you're hearing of your debt profile and the suggestion to restructure some of these debts because of the sustainability issues arising from acute shortage of revenue. So these are issues that are fundamental to our existence, economically, security-wise, and in terms of national development. So I expect him to take that decision because what happened in the last election, that's why the shortcomings we observed in that election. I am one of those who celebrated the positives. It is not an easy task for a party like Labour to clinch 12 states, including Lagos and Abuja. It's an easy task. So I know that it took the resilience of Nigerian people who desperately wanted to see change to annul some of the defects of INEC shenanigans to pull through and come up with such number of votes. Those that are still alive and are willing to do more. So all that it will take to aggravate that anger in them is to underperform from day one. And if there was improvements in less than a year, I cannot guarantee you that all will be well. So this is like a warning.
Who rates performance? Who are the point measures to say, okay, this is good enough?
I'm in my house.
But some people say critics of the government will never see anything good.
No, it's not true. If there is a country that the people are very easy to please and satisfy, it is Nigeria. Just do a little. Nigerians will sing your praises beyond even what you've done. Our current president enjoyed honeymoon for about 4 years. There's nothing you will say that his supporters will not tell you that he's doing right. They will tell you he's doing well. He was so loved and adored that when he jacked up price of petroleum products from 87 naira to 145, he was applauded. People said this is the right thing.
He was there.
Yes. And now she called strike, it failed. Nobody complied. TUC refused to comply. Because if this is Muhammad Buhari doing the right thing.
Nigerian said, give him benefit of doubt. Yes. Believe he's capable
they
of changing.
They told him 19 again. Because they felt that it was not him that was the problem. It was people around him. They made all sorts of excuses for him.
Mm.
Yes. Nigerians are like that. They didn't for Jonathan. They did for Obasanjo. And I'm saying, how do you know things have improved? From in my house. And the power supply to my house improves from 2 hours a day to 6 hours a day. That's an improvement. If I come out of my house and discover that security has improved around me, cases of burglaries, robberies, all of that has reduced. If I walk the streets of Abuja, where I live, and I see that the policemen that are now mounting roadblocks around the streets are looking very healthy because they've increased their pay, they are using better vehicles, better security gadgets, and they no longer ask for bribes because they are now decently taken care of. I wonder that things have improved. You don't even need an advert to tell me that. You don't need a TV ad or any PR stunt for me to know that. When I go to public schools and see that, okay, I cannot put my children safely in district public schools because they have been improved by the new government, you don't need to tell me, I will know that they have improved.
Yeah.
Yes, Nigerians are not ungrateful people. If you do not do the right thing, the Nigerians will complain, and they have a right to do so. Because if they don't complain, they will resort to self-help. I will see some people resorting to self-help. In the way of Boko Haram, banditry, piracy in the South, and all sorts of high-profile criminality. So please, it's in the interest of all of us. So that when I come here every Wednesday, I will simply be discussing policy propositions, ideas, the merits and the demerits of some of those propositions. I'm not talking about existential issues. Existential. It should not be my desire to do that. I was saying, Mr. President-elect, you have what it takes to do it. You can assemble the best brains in this country from where they are found and put them in government with the mandate to deliver on good governance in line with your manifesto. His manifesto is beautiful. Among the three, if you ask me, I'm even more impressed with his manifesto. But the problem is implementing it. His manifesto talks about a public sector presence in government, which is something that I've always talked about. It's the manner that says, look, we need to have a stake alongside the private sector. But the challenge is, how are you going to reposition that public sector to be able to do that, which you have put down in your policy document? It will take that deliberate effort from you, based on an intention.
What we call political will.
To say, look, I want to do the right thing. I want to do it right. And I won't accept anything less than right things to be done. He will succeed. Mm. Nigerians will cooperate with you. Once they begin to see the effect of your good reforms, your good governance policies, they will all align. It's as simple as that.
Mm. All right, let's take a call or two quickly before we go for the news. And then we'll touch, Dr. Majid, we'll get your opinion about the National Assembly sending independent candidacy bill to the president for assent. That will come a little bit later. Call us up on 0700-951-0000. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon, Dr. Majid.
Good afternoon, sir.
And good afternoon, Dick.
You're welcome. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
I want to appreciate Dr. Majid for listening to him. And I hope this government are listening. They will take advice given to them. We hope for better Nigeria. We hope for better Nigeria. Thank you so much. And I appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Selassie. Hello.
Hello, my sister. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. Dr. Majid, good God bless you. I really enjoy your weekly tonic very well. But today on about my credit. My name is Obidjan Tumedis Matiku.
Go ahead. Quickly, go ahead.
About what you speak about P2B today, meeting Tumedis, I say no to that. If P2B is taking this table anywhere, any day, the obedience will lay court upon him. And they will do still our mandate. Now, the next thing is that Obi is Labour Party. Obi made Labour Party to stand today. So, between the two fashion and chairman and chair waiting, they're not killing themselves for nothing. You need to be fake, and you see that guy. Baby can never make a word with that kind of thing.
All right. All right. Okay, your opinion there. Let's hear another caller. Hello.
Hello, my name is Stanley.
Welcome, Stanley.
Yeah, I want to comment on the transmission of the resource life. And all
okay,
that.
You've got 50 seconds.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary because it will not validate or invalidate what will happen at the end of the outcome of the election. Besides, the Defense Council, the Research Council, and the journalists will always tell Nigerians what happened at the end of the day. So there is no point. And who is going to put the bill if it was to be televised, you know, if it was to go live? Who pays for 180 days, you know, live coverage of the tribunal and all of that? So these things need to be considered before, you know, going live or deciding to go live or not. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's take a quick break for the news. Dorcas is already seated. We'll be back with more.
Let's Talk Station is here to keep you informed. Only on your number one for talk, 95.1 Nigeria Info. Let's Talk.
The hub for information,
current affairs and more.
President uses last Democracy Day address to talk about several issues including security.
Join the conversation
right here. Let's Talk.
And now, news from the nation's capital. This is Abuja Today.
Thank you for joining us for Abuja Today. The FCT Police Command has refuted some media reports of a kidnap incident in Peji near Abuja. The FCT Police Public Relations Officer Josephine Ade said in a statement that the command undertook a detailed investigation of the alleged abductions, including intelligence-led information gathering, and found no evidence of such an incident. According to the FCT Police spokesperson, the investigation is further supported by the fact that no victims or families of victims have come forward with any information or evidence of a kidnapping. The police, however, renewed its commitment to ensuring the safety of citizens. It urged anyone with any information related to the alleged incident to come forward for necessary action. The Federal Capital Development Authority says the Federal Executive Council has approved the award of contract for 9 new projects across the city. Executive Secretary of FCDA Shehu Ahmed disclosed this on Tuesday at a press conference on activities of the FCDA. According to him, FEC on Monday approved the revised contract for the construction and equipping of the 220-bed Gwarimpa District Hospital Phase 1 at the cost of 5.7 billion naira. He said that approval has also been given for the revised estimated contract for the construction of 3 solid waste transfer stations at Mpape, Apo and Kubwa at the cost of 6.2 billion naira. Ahmed added that the contract for the provision of electric power and water supply to Apo Tafi Federal Integrated Staff Housing Site was also approved. Other contracts awarded are the construction of 15-kilometer road from A2 Junction along Abuja Lokoja Road in Pei in Kwali Area Council at the cost of 11.5 billion naira and the construction of Nanda Pandagi Dangara Agiana Road. Still in Abuja today, in a similar development, the Federal Capital Territory Administration says it has evacuated 3,000 mentally challenged persons from the streets of Abuja between 2019 and 2023. Director, Department of Social Welfare Services of the Social Development Secretariat of FCTA, Sani Amar Rabi, disclosed this in an interview on Tuesday in Abuja. Dr. Amar Rabi said that the department has records of people who testify that they were able to find their missing relations through the FCTA. The director added that the Social Welfare Department will continue to work with the Mandate Secretary for the Social Development Secretariat, Adiza Kabir, to rid the city of all kinds of human and environmental nuisance. He, however, commended the efforts of the Nigeria Police Divisions in Abuja for their support in helping to keep the city sane.
That wraps up Abuja today. Thank you for listening. My name is Dorcas Atinuke Gbija. It's back to Kimberly on Hard Facts.
Information is key.
It is power.
Information rules the world.
Get informed.
Stay informed. Nigeria Info, your number one station for talk.
This is Hard Facts.
Hard Facts.
Hard Facts.
On 95.1 Nigeria Info.
Nigeria Info.
Yes, it is Hard Facts, and we're still on the round table with our guest, Dr. Majid Dahiru. We call him Doctor here every Wednesday. He's a researcher, a columnist, and the tech team lead of Luke's Terra Leadership Foundation, looking at some of the big stories driving conversation in the country. We started off with looking at the position of the president-elect of the APC and that of his vice, saying they're not predisposed to the idea of televising the petition. We talked about that. We also looked at the drama at the tribunal, the court today, where supporters of Labour Party rough-handled Apapa for just being, you know, controversial factional leader. We also looked at the meeting of the presidential candidate of the NNPP meeting with the president-elect in France and what that means for politics, alignment and national government, if we can use that word, even though the president-elect himself is not, you know, predisposed to using this whole talk about national. He's talked about competence repeatedly. We'll get to the next story in a bit, but let's get to hear a few more callers and read some messages. Then we'll look at this move for independent candidacy and see if, the prospect of it will brighten the future. Let's hear your take. 0700-951-0000-0809-597-4869 or 0809-993-0137. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Alex. I'm calling from Zone 6.
We're listening, Alex.
I actually appreciate Dr. Majid, the way he has been handling. In fact, every Wednesday, I always look forward to hearing from him. I want to talk on the Apapa. That is the factional APC leader, of Labour Party leader. I think he is overstepping his boundary. I was thinking that what he should have done was to, since he believes he has a judgment, what would have done if I were in his shoes, in order not to, because a lot of people see him, and even the way he his postulations shows that he's acting a script. And I was thinking that he would have used it, even if they have given him money, or maybe he's acting for his trap man. He should have done it in such a way that it would not be, wouldn't have been that open. There are insinuations that he wants to immediately, he said they should brief him, that the lawyers should come and brief him, of which I listened to when one of the lawyers said that he is not the one that they did not engage. He did not engage them, and they are not answerable to him. So, and you are insisting to the level of coming to court, you know. And I'm aware that Bure is there, and I don't think he only came there and began to say, "I'm the chairman, I'm this, I'm that."
Oh, all right,
he would have been one to observe. He would have come as an observer while waiting for the final judgment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Hello.
Hello, Kim. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My regards to Dr. Majid. My name is Olajide. I'm calling from Washington, D.C. As of today, Kim, I hope you are hearing me.
Go ahead, Olajide.
Okay, good. As of today, the authentic Labour Party chairman is Apapa. And that is what God says. Any other one is nothing. The man has every right to go in there because as of today is the party Labour chairman. But look at the way he was treated. And that is what we are saying. Kim, okay, this obedience on radio, on TV, on social media, physically, they do not hear anybody against them. Okay, I want to ask, is it Tinubu that gives Wike money and the other PDP governor that they went against PDP? Is it Tinubu that gives them money? See, the way they are going, I pray. If they win, that means nobody will be able to talk. That means they will silence everybody. That means you cannot talk. And this is not the way we want Nigeria to be. It's a nation of law. If the court has doubted somebody that you are this, at least we should give respect to that person. But the way you are going, let's see. God bless Nigeria. God bless Nigeria.
Thank you very much, Olajide. Hello.
Hello, Kim. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Sisi Goodwill calling from Lugbe. Mr. Majid, my regards.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Unfortunately, your voice changed somehow today. I'm a bit disappointed. When did Tinubu start having a fatal mind? We don't need Tinubu as our president in this 21st.
All right, let's hear another caller.
Hello, King. Mr. Majid, this is the first time I'm calling when you are there, and I'm glad. I really appreciate you being rejecting all your values in 100%. Now, somebody just called for this last caller, and we were talking about the details, and I'm asking, what did he say when people were actually killed by certain people? What did he say? They are not moving the country to any direction. So then, we give you space.
Your connection is really poor. It's getting worse, actually. So sorry about that. You have to call back. Hello?
Hello. Hello, Kim. Good afternoon, Chania. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's Victor, Airport Road.
Welcome, Victor.
Now, the issue is this. If they don't want the court proceedings to be televised, that means they have a skeleton in their cupboard. You get. I know the election is a tribunal, and I know we're going to come up victory at the end of the day. If the judges are honest and are not corrupt, you get me? Because the challenge that happened in universities and other places, and if it's a claim they won, it should be proven in court. Have a nice deliberation. That papa is also saying his time.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's hear another call and then look at some messages. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Welcome to the show. Good afternoon.
All right. Let me comment on...
What's your name, sir?
We're calling from Central Iraq.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, I believe there are about four political parties who believe the election is trying to run out. And the one political party decides to file a motion asking the court to grant a live broadcast, and then the rest of the party are objecting to that live broadcast except one.
Okay, we're getting some distortion. I don't know, is your radio on? I can't even make out what you're saying.
Can you hear me now?
Hello. Keep talking. Can you hear him, Dr. Majid?
It's breaking.
Yeah.
Hello.
Okay, you have to call us back. Sorry about that. Hello?
Evening. This is Chooks of God.
Welcome, Chooks.
Yeah. Those who are sympathizing for my papa, they said the same thing. I think their mission has failed. If he tried next time, he will see new shoes in his head.
Okay. Oh. No.
You have forgot what they did.
Don't encourage violence.
Okay.
Do not encourage violence.
No, it's not good at all. Please.
Hello?
Hello?
Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Kimberly. How are you?
Fine and well. You're welcome.
Good afternoon, Professor of Political Science. Dr. Mujid, how are you? I'm working from Gwagwanada.
Okay, good afternoon, sir.
Thank you. My question, can we consolidate
our democracy by destabilizing the opposition camp. The question, who is Lamidi Apapa at the inception of the creation of Labour Party? Who was he? When did he emerge as even the party chief of the Labour Party? They are going to cause this array in opposition camp. And if there's instability among the opposition, it will not augur well for the political development of Nigeria. It happened in the 60s, you know where it led us to. It happened in the Second Republic. It will not be different in the modern day Nigeria. If we want to consolidate democracy, let create an enabling environment for all the operators of democracy in Nigeria. But when you are causing this area, causing confusion, opposition party, and when you're on your, it is like the developed world allegedly promoting terrorism in a certain part of the world. We know the consequences. We know the consequences in the development world. If people, even in developing countries, there are crises, insurgency, and instability, there will not be peace in that part of the world. It's better if we want to create free, credible election. Let's create enabling environment for all operators, for all observers. Thank you. That is my tip.
Thank you very much, Abu Bakar. All right, I'm an APC member. Who is this? Prince Wankujayi. But I'm beginning to suspect the leadership of my party. Why would they reject the life proceedings? If my candidate didn't win the election, please, I beg, it should be given to the rightful winner. Definitely not speaking like a APC member. I disagree with Dr. Majid's opinion on the issue of transmission of court proceeding live. I think it doesn't have anything to do with a final judgment. Mind you, journalists will be present and the procedures will be reported accordingly. Piccolo sent that one in. Perhaps those opposing public proceeding hope to compromise the press and influence how the proceedings are reported. But if videos, nothing can be hidden, says Alexo. All South African tribunal handling election matter are shown live on national TV for the world to see. Same with Kenya. How can a SAN say just to show the world how APC won the election is a waste of time? This is Nigeria, where we slap you and tell you to go to court. We can now see what happens in court. Williams in Asusi. Good afternoon. I beg to differ on the opinion of that the presidential election petition activity should be broadcast live on TV or any platform. My reason is based on the fact that the press, who are the eagle eyes of the public, are allowed to the courtroom, and it's enough and reliable as they are regarded as a fourth estate of the realm. Live broadcasts could put the judges under undue pressure. Adebanjo Lukman from Zamani Airport Road. Thank you so much, Dr. Majid. Please, I want to ask, why are people calling Lamidi Apapa a nit? Nobody has called him that. So Anslem Amunike from Kuchinguru, don't call him that on air. If we breed in secrecy, hence they're doing everything to scuttle democracy. Plus, they are Papa shenanigan. But a catastrophic cataclysm awaits them. Televising the proceeding will cut off lot of anecdote. God is the final arbiter. The Patriot. I'm surprised. Since 2015, the APC have always tried to make us believe that they are doing us a favor by being in power. So they always want to determine what they think is good for us and try to force it down our throat. What's wrong with the live broadcast of the proceeding? Victor Ogunna from Duse is asking. I totally support the saying that APC and Tinubu score an own goal. Cosmos in Suleja. Good afternoon, Professor Majid. Madiba from Abuja sent that one in. This is mankind from Zuba. The guilty are always afraid. Okay? Your guests are most opposition that were not inclined in the live broadcast of proceeding at tribunal, not being fair to judiciary to operate on their own way of doing their own thing. Intimidation of the judges cannot change the decision of the judge. Rather, they will just heat up the polity, and end of the day, justice will prevail. I think we need to work more on our... Okay, and leave politician and judiciary to know what to do while we work on our emotions. That's a caller's take there. And boy, let's read two more. Virtue says it's now an open secret. The ruling party might just be beneficiaries of a very faulty process that made this unpopular winner emerge. Mosso, the drama that took place today before the proceeding, before Labour Party representative and Apapa, who claimed to be the party chairman, justifies what I've been saying. The crisis in Labour Party is obviously the hand of Esau and the voice of Jacob. It's known fact that Imposter is the field columnist sent to destabilize and sabotage Labour Party and Obi's chances of reclaiming our mandate. A clear conscience fears nothing. Lastly, so Kwankwaso is the investor, Tinubu's camp and spin doctors told Nigeria is going to meet with in Europe. All right. And how do you meet with people who feel like they were robbed or you robbed? Do homeowners meet with those who robbed them? This is a sad commentary. DOOCFR. Okay, dear. Thank you very much. Dr. Majid, let's take your thoughts on this particular story about the National Assembly. They've directed its clerk to transmit a bill seeking to provide for independent candidacy in presidential, governorship, national and state houses of assembly, as well as local government election to President Buhari for Asen. We're counting now how many days before he leaves office. The National Assembly resolved to send a constitution alteration bill under number 58 after the Senate approved recommendation of a report. The report was presented on Tuesday by Ovie Omoagege, Deputy President of the Senate and Chair of the Ad Hoc Committee on Constitution Amendment. Now, while presenting his report, Omoagege said Gombe House of Assembly has approved the Constitution Alteration Bill, making it the 24th state to approve the legislation. The bill proposes that for any candidate to contest the presidential election as an independent candidate, they must obtain the verified signature of at least 20% of registered voters from each of the 36 states. To participate in governorship election, the independent candidate must obtain the verified signature of at least 20% of registered voters from each of the states of the local government of the state. And the bill provides that any citizen willing to contest National Assembly election must obtain the verified signature of at least 20% of registered voters from each of the local governments in the respective senatorial district or federal constituency. The Upper Legislative Chamber also sent a bill to the President seeking the inclusion of National Assembly presiding officers in the National Security Council. Why did that part crack you up, Dr. Majid?
National Security Council.
The presiding officers
of National Assembly. And the thing is, sometimes the National Assembly amendments to the Constitution seems to have some self-serving elements inside it that makes it, you know, quite unacceptable for presidential assent. I think the way the National Security Council is constituted presently, I think it's okay. Let them perform optimally first. Before I talk about expansion, but what I know is normally the presiding officers of the National Assembly are supposed to be giving security briefs on a regular basis. By relevant authorities. So that should suffice. I mean, that is not the problem why we have insecurity in Nigeria. I mean, that the heads of the various houses in the National Assembly are not in the council is not the reason why we are having Boko Haram and bandits all over the place. So I just think sometimes they were stressing of these privileges of theirs and try to make them constitutional. But on the issue of independent candidacy, I think it's something that is worth trying, even though my opinion on laws is that it's not the amount of laws that actually matters, it's the implementation. Now, and implementing laws, you have to look at the intent behind the crafting of the letters of the law so that it can fulfill the purpose for which it was actually made. And so in this instance, yes, we have multi-party democracy. Has it really worked for us? Not really. So to now talk about independent candidacy, one might also ask, or what difference will it make? So in principle, there's nothing wrong with independent candidacy. Most of democracies in the world, they have independent candidacy. From the UK to the US, they have independent candidacy. And they are multi-party democracies. US is actually a multi-party democracy. People don't seem to understand this. US has more parties than just two. Yes, it's not just the Democratic Party and the Republican Party that is the party that are the parties that are in the US. No, there are more parties. There are many parties in the US. And also, they have independent candidates too. So I think once in a while, you see an independent candidate coming close to, you know, top three presidential contenders, in election certain time. So it happens once in a generation anyway. So there's nothing wrong with an independent candidacy. And the way it is crafted here, I think it might ward off the fear of it being an all-comers affair. If you are to get 20% of registered voters, the signature of the registered voters in whatever constituency you're trying to contest, I think it is stringent enough to keep off all busybodies that don't want to now take advantage. So you now have 1 million people on the ballot for governorship election in one state. But the problem now is this. Do we have the mechanism to ensure that truly the signatures collected are verifiable and are indeed signatures of registered voters who really use their hands to append their signature to the nomination of this independent candidate? That's where the challenge lies. Because we don't have the mechanism to check and verify the 20,000 signatures.
Yeah.
Yes, we may not have it. And the kind of compromise you see in public service, if somebody in that exam to compromise to, they can simply approve the garbage signatures. And before you know it, you have almost everybody in the constituency contesting for the same position, which now makes it very difficult for any to conduct elections. But in any case, I doubt if the president will sign this bill in front of I doubt.
But the time that we have.
I think it will just be for
whoever is coming,
I doubt. But then, the question around independent candidacy is one that is ongoing, and it has its merits, definitely. Mm.
All right. It does. Let's run for a quick break and be back to wrap this up.
This is Nigeria Info.
Nigeria Info.
All right. So the doubt is of the president signing that bill. Giving time. Honestly, he's already living in the glass house at this point. It's the things that are already on his table around that he's attending to.
Yeah.
He's back into the country.
Yeah, after treating his toothache.
Exactly. Mm. I mean, you have toothache. The last thing you want to hear is a new bill coming in for like let whoever wants to take over, whoever is taking over, take over from this point in time. And it'd be nice to see if it would be priority at all for the incoming president, because I already know his hands are full. The issue of subsidy is right in front of him. Our economy, the debt profile is insane. And there are a lot of things that the first 100 days he would really want to concern himself with at this point in time.
But the issue of subsidy you just raised, I don't know why we are setting the wrong agenda for the current president. Even though he himself appears to have also set the wrong agenda for himself. Because all three of them actually said we're going to remove subsidy.
Yeah.
And I've always argued that will be a fatal mistake.
Well, Buhari talked about it endlessly and he never did.
Buhari removed subsidy. People don't know this. Buhari removed subsidy in 2016.
He did.
But
they were doing under recovery. Is that not subsidy?
That is against the runoff play. What the expectation was that we remove subsidy, everything is fine.
Mm.
And that the price will come down because there will be more competition, people will import more, prices will come down. And when a lot of Buhari supporters were even showing us pictures from, I think it was A.A. Rano, who was asking that 143 to 145? It was a big deal. But when the government realized that no, the price will not come down, and that 143 was going to go up, because the factors that will now be determining the price are now out of control of Nigeria. Crude oil price, one of those determinant factors.
Yeah.
So, and if you allow the price of things to go beyond certain levels, it will not only cause hardship through inflation, it will rupture the economy. So it was when crude oil prices increased substantially from what they met it, and it now impacted negative on the price of imported PMS, that government started what they now call under recovery, which is another name for subsidy. They tactically now restored it, because what they said was going to happen didn't happen. That is, the price will come down on its own due to competition. It didn't happen. It was now set to go up again for 145. So they began to intervene gradually. Because it was then it dawned on them that you can't float the price of PMS. We floated the price of diesel, it's almost $1,000 today.
Yeah.
We floated the price of kerosene, it never came back, it's all $1,000 today. You can't float the price of PMS, which is like the live wire of Nigeria's informal economy. We floated the price of gas. You know what the price of gas is today. And so, We are about floating price of electricity. We're already seeing the increment. So these are issues.
It just feels like every quarter there's a slight upward review.
Now, this brings over to the question of energy insecurity. Let me repeat it for the optimist time. There's nothing wrong with subsidy payment on energy products and services. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. You can argue that the figure being put out there,
yeah,
is suspect. Fine, that is corruption. Deal with it under the wrap of corruption, not subsidy itself. Again, I will remind anybody that cares to listen, including the incoming government, point to me anywhere in the developed world or fast developing world where energy is not subsidized. I want to know that country. In China, they not only subsidize fossil fuels, they subsidize renewable energy products and services for citizens. In China, one spread of crude goes beyond between $100 and $130 in the international market. The central government of China begins to implement a subsidy for local consumption through the subsidization of the production of energy sources, energy products. That is, for refiners, they give them crude at a discounted rate. They take off some certain cost of crude for the purpose of refining locally. It is the same thing with the United States of America, where we borrowed capitalism from. American government and the States of America combined spend billions of dollars to subsidize PMS every year in America. And Nigerians in America are listening to me as I'm talking about it now. In fact, in 2022, it was estimated that China alone spent about $130 billion in subsidies of energy products. $130 billion. America, you can't even, they don't even declare it anymore because it's a national priority. In the UK, they have decided to spend through this period to mitigate the rising cost of living about $100 billion to subsidize energy products and services. It is a core responsibility of government. So anybody that thinks he wants to increase price of petrol as we are today from this level, when inflation has reached double digit and is growing, the person should brace up for social unrest and certain things that cannot even be canvassed on radio. So when you see our pundits, our intellectuals, former CBN governors, former this, former that, hammering on removal subsidy as the silver bullet that will resuscitate Nigeria, I wonder where they read their economics from. Honestly, I just wonder. Now the question you ask me is, why is China and America and Western Europe able to pay subsidy for energy products and services?
Yeah.
Including subsidy for food. You don't ask me how much America pays for subsidy on food. It's something that they don't even disclose. Because food is subsidized in America. In Saudi Arabia, petrol is subsidized, electricity is subsidized, education is subsidized up till foreign education for citizens. When people tell you some of this crap, that government does not do this and that for people, tell them they are talking arrant nonsense.
No, I think most people are coming from the figure perspective and not able to reconcile.
The figure itself is, even the corrupt figure, is meager, very meager. Compared to dollars, all the trillions you are hearing is paper in dollars. The question is, how are these countries able to have enough money to pay subsidies? Why do they need to pay subsidies for healthcare, for education, and all sorts of subsidies, including housing? Germany pays subsidy on housing. How are they able to get this money to do these things and not go broke the way Nigeria claims we're going broke because of payment or subsidy on only PMS? The question is, in those countries, they have gone beyond the level where a government official can steal $1 from the treasury. In China, you steal $1, you die. Government is efficient. Government does not eat the national cake alone. No, they don't. There is almost near zero corruption. You've heard of a lot of criticism about Donald Trump, right? None has said Donald Trump mismanaged $1 as American president. Have you noticed that? That in our recent memory as Nigerians, since we followed American issues and global issues, there's not been a report that any UK prime minister or American president mismanaged £1 or $1 of their government money. Have you noticed that? No such allegation has ever come up. It is that you promise that the price of PMS will come down in our country in 6 months, and it only came down in 6.5 months, so please, you have to resign. Not that somebody stole money. If they have gone beyond that level, they no longer steal money. That is what we should be aiming towards. Secondly, their governments are like a incorporated entities that are business oriented. China is the world, one of the world's largest businessmen as a country. So the president of China is the CEO of China Incorporated. America is the largest, the leading world businessman. So the president of America is the CEO of America Incorporated. Same thing with the UK, Saudi Arabia, and all other countries. So these people have thriving state-owned and state-supported enterprises that are competing globally and bringing in millions of billions of dollars into the coffers of the country, from which they take a little and subsidize and make life better for their citizens. Mm. That is the way we should be going. Not telling me to remove subsidy. Stop spending money on federal education. Stop being so sponsor. What are you talking about? What is now the role of government? What is the role of government? These countries have developed and evolved into nation states of citizens that are administered with the principles of equity, fairness, and justice. Everybody is equal before the law. Equal.
Perhaps it's taking the easy way out, just ending the subsidy to dealing with the corruption problem.
If you take that easy way out, there's no guarantee in this world that if you stop such payment today and you say you're saving the money, that money itself will be saved for the purpose of Nigerian people. There's no guarantee. So what I'm saying is, first, as an oil-producing country, are we supposed to be importing petroleum in the first place? How come nobody has plans to revive our refineries? How come? You know, I was listening to you on radio once. We had a guest here who talked about privatizing refineries and all that. Sometimes I wonder where Nigerians read this thing from. He mentioned Brazil and Petrobras. Petrobras is a state-owned enterprise. In fact, the glorious era of Brazil in modern times was under the first coming of President Lula da Silva, who was a leftist, a socialist. Somebody who took government into business. Mm. That was how Brazil was leapfrogged from a comatose economy to a thriving one and became a world economic powerhouse. That was why I've always convinced that for us to get to the right direction, we need to take the turn that leads to the left. We need to go left to get it right in this country. And I keep restating it. We need to have a serious government that will not steal money at any level, that will be purposeful and deliberate about stamping out corruption. You can't be flying presidential jets in numbers that I can no longer count, convoy of cars, living a princely life as government officials both at the state and the federal level. And then you are telling me that the only problem in Nigeria is to remove subsidy from the PMS that Nigerians are struggling to buy. Even as it is today, it is too expensive for Nigerians to afford. You don't want to remove subsidy. Then the bank will not go to 1,000. And you expect to have a country to govern. How? How? I don't know why we are not thinking anymore. We have gone down this road of neoliberalism to the point that we no longer think as a people. Why are our four refineries not functioning? Why? Why are state governments not bringing out their monies to build refineries? They spend money on elections. They spend money to fund. In fact, the only function is funding the parties in their state. They are leaders of the party in their state, funding parties. They are not spending money on productive sectors of their state economies. Go around this country. Our governors spend more time in Abuja and overseas than in their states. Go around and look at it. I watched one governor this morning who was giving an interview to a TV station from Abuja. It's scandalous. All of them are competing on who has the best SUV, the biggest SUV, the most sophisticated bulletproof SUV. That is what they are doing. Instead of them staying in their states, rolling up their sleeves, cultivating their lands, mining their mineral resources, developing their natural endowment into something that is convertible to revenue. That is the role of government. Nobody will bid for you if you don't start it. You must start it. You must be there. People will see that you are serious doing this before they come and join you. And let me state it again, that energy is a key responsibility of government world over. Some of the leading energy companies in the world are either government-owned or government-supported. You see, the Shell that came to Nigeria and explored oil for 50 years, between 1907 and 1957, when they struck oil in commercial quantities in the Lower Ibiri, was using the pension fund of the UK as seed funding for the activities all over the world. And they were supported by the British Crown. And in the post-colonial era, they were supported by the British government, the Dutch government, and any government that has interest in that company, using diplomacy and all other methods to get them oil fields across the world. That is the role of government, doing business. Until we become a government that does business, I want to do business, I have to be very serious-minded. you have to be serious. You cannot mismanage one area because I'm doing business. Let me give you a tip of a businessman. My favorite restaurant in Abuja is Shagalinko restaurant. When you go to Shagalinko, it's been standing there for how many years now? Fine. It started from Zaria to Kaduna and then in Abuja. The owner of that restaurant sometimes is around. Do you know that he serves his guests by himself if he's around? He comes to the table and asks you, what do you want? Or you tell him, he goes to the kitchen and makes sure that you are served. That is, he takes his business very seriously. So the profit he makes from it is what now goes to fund the relatively prestigious life of his children and family. But first, he had to work hard for this. Our government must adopt this method, this approach, to work hard. Work hard, work honestly for the productivity of this country. If you don't do that, if you move subsidy today, you end up removing salaries from public servants, you end up removing all forms of government subvention, and the national debt will keep depleting. So you need seriousness. So what should come from this country is not removing subsidy because they are subsidizing.
Yeah.
What are they doing right? What is it they are doing right?
Hmm.
I was in a ministry once, and a Chinese guy walked in, a marketer. Started marketing a product and service of a Chinese electrical power company. And so somehow the person that I was sitting with was understood where the Chinese people are coming from. So I asked him, where is this company located? He said, China. Where in China? He said, so county or region or something. So he now asked, so who owns the company? He said, no, it's Chinese government that owns the company.
Wrong, yeah.
And right now this company is operating in 4 countries. So Nigeria is the 5th country we're trying to enter. Imagine what that company is bringing him back as revenue to that county where it originated from by operating in 4 African countries and targeting to enter Nigeria's market as a 5th. This is how they make their money, to be able to subsidize and make life bountiful for their people. What are you doing about what is it that Nigeria is offering anybody other than share national cake by pushing ourselves for speaker, deputy speaker, senate president, vice president? It is ton of Muslims, ton of Christians, ton of North, ton of South, blah, 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 blah. All on crude oil money. Now, is this such that made it impossible for Nigeria to up its output, crude oil output, beyond 2.4 million barrels that OPEC allocates to us, our quota? We're not even able to meet it.
We're not able to meet it. When you mentioned 2.4,
and I'm saying,
why
I'm not even able to surpass it? Saudi pumps 10 million barrels of crude per day from that country.
Mm.
And there's no oil stealing in. Oil, how do you call it? Oil theft in Saudi Arabia. Look, every drop of crude that leaves the soil in Saudi is recorded. So they make maximum from it.
Mm.
Saudi Aramco is a state-owned enterprise that is declaring billions and billions of dollars in profit every single year. Now in Saudi, whereas they have 15% VAT, there's no personal income tax in Saudi Arabia. Citizens don't pay personal income tax in Saudi. They only pay about 15%. Simple. And they have education, healthcare, energy subsidized for families, for Saudi citizens, including free scholarship abroad. It's government-owned. Government pays 40 million people. We're not even asking for all of this. We're not asking for all of this. So the little that I just are still managing to get, the only solution you have, all of you that are eggheads in Nigeria, the only solution you have is to remove it.
Instead of dealing with the corruption aspect of it.
The issue of governance, it's just remove subsidy, that's all. Nobody talking about fixing refinery, they tell you the government cannot do it. Is it an excuse that government cannot fix its own refinery? How do you tolerate and accept that as a reality, that government cannot fix refinery and run refinery? Then what is the government doing in government? That is the issue.
Mm.
It's not a sing-song. Ah, remove subsidy, remove subsidy. Enter now. Let them remove subsidy and face the consequences. Not from me, oh, because by the case of course, we still afford to buy fuel. But look at what inflation is saying. When the inflation crossed single digits in Nigeria, 2 things happened.
Mm.
When petrol was increased,
and we're dealing with 24.22%.
It was when petrol was increased to 1.5 that it jacked up everything. That was the point. In addition to food inflation that some people are tracing to the fact that they blocked they closed down the borders.
The borders, yeah.
But this was the issue. This was energy. In the UK, energy cost the cost of living crisis. The government had to now impose subsidy to mitigate. And the Labour Party of UK today, who just won majority seats in the councils, are saying, look, as a government, we will nationalize some private companies and establish new energy companies. Because it has been proven that the only country that survived the ravages of the Russia-Ukraine war are those whose governments are in control of the means of production in energy resources, including Russia and Ukraine itself. Until And until Russia started bombarding oil, what do you call it, power installations in Ukraine, specific target, there was no power outage in Ukraine because Ukraine is self-sufficient in energy. The reason Russia has survived all the sanctions till today is because Gazprom, that it is powerhouse, is owned,
it is
by,
owned
it.
By the state government. It's
state-owned. So all the billions of dollars deal it has with the European Union is Russian Federation government. So what are we talking about? Fixed government. Everything will be fixed alongside with it.
Mm. And it seems like it's a rocket science to fix government.
In
so
Nigeria,
they're looking the
like
easy way.
Science.
Yeah, because you know when the custom boss was talking about, are you sure about this,
this is,
number that you
yes.
import? Questioning it, you would expect that with interrogation.
Somebody should have asked, how can you think? How can you are not able to remit into a federation account because you are paying subsidy? How? Nobody's asking these questions. They'll tell you that you are subsidizing for people.
All we get to hear from a lot of people is, oh, we're using the bulk of our resources to pay subsidy,
and I'm saying,
more than we're spending on health
and
education.
I'm saying, how much is that? It tells you are very poor, you don't have money. Go and work for more money. This is the question. Go and work for more money. During COVID, for example, the American government, between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, shelled out over $4 trillion to citizens. Because they have the money. They are a functional economy. They have money. You see, this country are like a prosperous family where the father had trained his children through school, to the best of schools, because he was working hard. He works up with the money. He goes out, he works, he earns his money. He doesn't spend it in Bia Palo. He doesn't spend it on concubines. He doesn't misuse the money. He prioritizes the money on healthcare, food, shelter, clothing, and education for students. So he was able to train them to the point where they became graduates and they are economically empowered to now go out on their own to get some of the best jobs available. And so five of them now are working in different blue chip companies. And so they are now earning more. So for what they are earning, they are now supporting the home front. Is that not so? So daddy cannot take a deserved rest. Whenever he's ill, he goes to house A of his child, he's taken care of. They'll be struggling to take care of daddy and mommy. So they will say, okay, daddy, look, both you and mommy, come and go to England and spend 2 weeks for a holiday. Because the daddy has subsidized their life up to the point where they're able to stand and bring something back. That daddy represents a responsible government. And those children represent functioning citizens that are socially cohesive and productive enough to attract revenue from external sources. But if that man, when he was having money, wasted it on women, on wine, on all sorts of nonsense, and did not support these children in any way, and these children became disempowered, they would have been at home with him, struggled over maybe the house rent from the bus quarter or the revenue from the water that they are selling to the neighborhood. It would have been a house of commotion. And that is the situation with Nigeria, because that father represents the irresponsible government that Nigeria has been for a long time. This is how it works. So we need to have a responsible government that will not take one naira deliberately or otherwise. Now I told you that, look, the American government president, his consolidated salary per annum is $400,000. Yes. But you can't, it have gone beyond the level where the American president can award contract to his friend. It's no longer possible. They've gone beyond that threshold, though. That's why they are prosperous. It's same truth, Western Europe and much of these developed countries that are making progress. Let the Erufais of this world, the Sanusi Lamidus and the Soludos, let them advise government in this direction. And not just moving the subsidy. No! It's becoming a cliche. How do you, no government will do it. That's the truth. We already have to restore subsidy. Because when you looked at the situation and the security implication of high price of energy, particularly an energy product, that is the live wire of our economy, the live wire, everything runs on PMS in this country. He had to impose under recovery in the name of subsidy. Because if he does not do that, his government will collapse. So how can you not...
Well, the simple fact that he could not rip off the bandage completely is a sign that it will be a difficult one for even the next government
because
to pull off.
Because no government in the world does that. This is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah,
so what
we'll
is the point? Expand your wealth base through productivity. If you build a governor...
And fix refineries. So that we just want to talk about importing petrol.
If we don't have crude in Nigeria, nobody will talk about subsidy or not subsidy. Mm-hmm. Because we don't have it, so you have to pay. Do you have Toyota manufacturing plant in Nigeria? No, it's Japan that owns Toyota. So you can't complain they sell you an SUV for $150 million. You don't own it. But this one, we own it.
Refine it. And then
so we have the advantage of
super,
because it is homemade, it is our own. You say no, you cannot fix it. You are not, you don't, your government does not, cannot just do it. I don't know how you explain that. And there are governments in the world who is doing it. The Chinese National Oil Company is 100% state-owned. They are the ones that partnered with Niger to build the refinery in Niger. So there are many examples around the world where governments have a role. And if we are not going to take full part in enterprises, even your regulation, even your monitoring, must be done with economic common sense and efficiency of the business world, rather than political expediency of who knows who and how. That is the problem with Nigeria. So in every way, government must be a business-oriented entity. At whatever level of economic productivity it wants to undertake, even if it's just regulation, you must regulate efficiently. That was why our prioritization exercise failed in Nigeria. You thought you can just hand over assets to private people. So they hand over to their friends and cronies. So it failed. Essentially, it failed. Where is Nigeria Airways today after it was privatized?
Oh, aren't we hearing from the minister that it's definitely going to fly before 29th of May?
You know, the sad thing about Nigeria, or Nigeria Air, or Oil Nigeria, is that the core investor is Ethiopia Airline, a state-owned enterprise from Ethiopia. What crude oil is to Nigeria is what Ethiopia Airline is to Ethiopia.
Mm.
So what that means that Ethiopia Airline is not going to fly under the guise of Nigeria Air and take over the local market. I feel the capacity that
Ethiopia Air.
None of these people can compete with them in local. If I, me, I'll buy Air Nigeria, Ethiopia Airline under Air Nigeria, to fly local because they will have more capacity, they have newer planes, because they've been in this industry for years and they are bringing in billions of dollars in profit for the state of Ethiopia. So why can't you run your own? Why are you going to bring another foreign entity to run both local and foreign markets under the guise of Air Nigeria? Because some of you have acquired shares in that shell company called Air Nigeria, whereas the real owner is Ethiopia Airlines, a state-owned enterprise. If Ethiopia can do it, why can't Nigeria do it?
All right, we'll leave it at that. The challenge to see if they can, we can also. I want to say a very big thank you to Dr. Majid Tahiru. Thank you so much for your time on the roundtable with us
today. Thank you very much.
Quite intense. Thanks to all those who listened, contributed a number of messages, but I can't get to them. Would have a guest join me after the news at 5 o'clock by Tech Ha Nigeria. She did that, which is something that you stay close to your radio for a conversation. Let's go on a quick break. We'll be back with more.